Dr. Levin, let's start from the beginning. Could you define lupus, SLE, and tell me what its symptoms are?
So lupus is an autoimmune disease, and what autoimmune disease really means, it's a big word, but it really means that the body's immune system, which is really meant to protect your own self against outside invaders like infections, and also protects us against development of cancer, is a very finely tuned instrument. And what happens with that is it goes awry. And so instead of protecting you, it starts to recognize your own tissues as foreign, and in doing that, it attacks those tissues and causes symptoms. And those tissues in lupus can be many different things. So lupus can present to a physician, a rheumatologist, or just with symptoms that are very different in many cases. So the patients with lupus typically complain of fatigue, especially if they have systemic lupus. And the most common physical manifestations of lupus are skin rashes and arthritis. Arthritis meaning pain, stiffness, and swelling of the joints. Those are the two most common symptoms, but there are many other areas of the body that can be affected by lupus. So lupus can affect the heart and lungs and cause chest pain when you take a deep breath, that's called pleurisy. It can cause problems with the blood, where you can usually with the blood, what you would see in lupus if it was involved would be low counts, low red blood cell counts, low white blood cell counts, and low platelet counts. Those are the three cellular types in the blood. It can affect the kidneys, causing significant decline in kidney function, and it can affect the nervous system. And that's just some of it. There is more, but those are the major areas that it involves.
Well, how is it diagnosed?
So lupus is hard to diagnose, actually, and many patients are seen by multiple physicians before they get to the right type of doctor to diagnose the condition. So lupus is based on a constellation of symptoms, physical exam findings, and laboratory findings. So the symptoms that make up the diagnosis include certain types of skin rashes, and there are many different varieties of skin rashes that are classified as lupus. Another criteria that we use is abnormal sensitivity to the sun, and that's not usually what we would think of if somebody says they're photosensitive. That means their eyes are sensitive to the sun or bright lights, but it's actually that they get physically sick or develop rashes from ultraviolet light exposure. Arthritis usually is in the small joints of the hands and feet, wrists, but it can be multiple joints, and the joints can be tender to touch, stiff, especially with inactivity, and swollen. So these are three of the physical criteria for lupus. And then it's diagnosed with lab studies, and the lab studies include what's called an ANA. An ANA is an anti-nuclear antibody test. And what an ANA is you're actually detecting antibodies that are circulating against proteins that are in the nucleus of cells. And you take the patient's blood and wash it over a slide that has cells on it, and these proteins, these anti-nuclear antibody proteins, attach to the slide, to the proteins in the cell, and then they're stained. And so you see a fluorescent stain, and that's positive in patients with ANA. And just about every patient with systemic lupus have positive ANA tests. And then there's a whole host of other lab studies that are involved in confirming the diagnosis of lupus. And there, it's way too many of these to discuss at this time, or I'd run out of time. But that's those are the main findings that are important in diagnosing lupus. There are many others, and that's not a complete list.
Well, you know, we're talking about a wide variety of symptoms here. Have you found there to be a typical patient profile for this disease?
Yeah, so there is a typical patient profile. Generally, patients can be any age, but the disease much more affects females than males, on the order of 9 to 10 to 1. I would say patients can be just about any age, but it affects younger people. It can affect kids infrequently. It can affect teens. But the biggest group of patients are in the range of in their 20s to 50s is really the peak incidence of the disease. And then, so that helps you with the profile of the patient. The second thing is that these things that I mentioned, these symptoms, don't occur in isolation. They occur in groups. So a patient might present, for example, they've developed over a few weeks or a few months with fatigue, accompanied by perhaps a rash, perhaps a mouth sore, perhaps arthritis. And while that group of symptoms is not specific, when you start doing tests and you get a positive ANA and some of the other findings in lab studies that will help to confirm the diagnosis, that's how you can profile and identify somebody with lupus.
With lupus, do you find that there are any lifestyle changes that people can adapt to help their symptoms? And if so, what would they be?
Well, lifestyle changes are important. I don't think you can adequately treat active disease just with lifestyle changes, but there are certain things that are important. First of all, a very common symptom of this disease is fatigue, and that's one of the things I always ask my patients about as I see them for checkup to evaluate how they're doing. And you've got to listen to your body. If you're tired, you need to get rest. Pushing yourself and driving yourself through being fatigued is not a healthy thing to do. The second lifestyle change that's really important for lupus patients is, while not every patient is photosensitive, their disease isn't activated by sun exposure, avoidance of sunbathing, wearing a hat, especially in areas of the country or the world that have lots of very bright sunny days, ultraviolet light can activate the disease, and there are certain segment of lupus population that's very sensitive to ultraviolet light. So wearing good sunscreen, avoidance of sunbathing, and wearing a hat and sunglasses can be really helpful in controlling these symptoms. When you're feeling better, living a normal life is really important. So while patients are fatigued when their disease is active, if we get it under control, going back and exercising is good, always listening to your body. So exercise is good. And then the other lifestyle change people always talk about is diet. And I really don't have any specific diet recommendation that I can make that will either help or make worse this condition.
Well, and thank you for that, because that's fascinating. I think that's going to help a lot of people. I didn't know there were so many different changes that you can affect, lifestyle changes you can affect to support your, the reduction of your symptoms. But once you have lupus, what would you say some of the typical treatment regimes are for the condition?
So, first of all, I just want to say that we do have good treatments for lupus, but we don't have the perfect thing. And one of the things that, so while I'm going to now go into what things that I'll use to treat my patients with lupus. Every medication that I'm going to discuss has downsides, and we're trying to identify better medications all the time. And I think this is a good time to mention the need for new drugs and new products to treat this condition. Our drugs are not perfect, so we do have there are clinical trials or research projects that are going on right now in all different phases to develop new medications for lupus. At one point within the past couple of years, I heard that there are over 800 different compounds that are in clinical development for lupus, which means that there's a huge unmet need for medications. And I'll talk about one of the clinical trials that we're that I'm involved with, and that some of our colleagues are involved. There's this study is using a new product called a BTK inhibitor for specific individuals with confirmed lupus who aren't adequately responding to standard treatments. So if you have interest in clinical trials, there is a study website that I want to mention called lupusstudy.com. It's LUPUSSTUDY, one word, .com. Or you can call 1-877-95-TRIAL, T-R-I-A-L. And you can contact and if you're interested in that. But before going into a clinical trial, there's a number of medications that we typically use. So a lot of patients, when they're diagnosed with lupus, one of the most common medications that's used is something called corticosteroids or steroids. And steroids are highly effective medicines to treat inflammation. And lupus, as I mentioned, is an immune inflammatory disease. And the goal of all of our treatments is to suppress the immune system that's gone awry. So prednisone, which is the most common steroid that's used, is used for treating lupus. And prednisone can be used at many different doses. And the problem with prednisone is it's a great short-term medicine, but it's a lousy long-term medicine. There's a whole lot of side effects that occur. And the longer you're on this medicine and the higher the dose that you take, the more likely problems are to occur. So whenever I start somebody on prednisone for uncontrolled disease, I'm always thinking, what else can I give this person to get them off this drug? Because the toxicities over time are such a problem. And I'll give you a few examples of the side effects of prednisone. So the drug can cause insomnia and anxiety. The drug can cause elevation of blood pressure or blood sugar. It can cause salt and water retention, bruising, osteoporosis, meaning thin bones that are prone to fracture or break. That's just some of the things that, and increased susceptibility to infection. I don't want to leave that one out because that's one of the most important ones. So that's a drug that's used oftentimes when patients having early on in the disease to get it under control, and also if a patient's having a flare-up of the disease, because the activity of the disease tends to relapse and remit. So it has a sine wave type of course where it goes up and down.
For people like me who know the words clinical trials but may not have a good understanding of what we mean when we say clinical trials, can you give me your description, your elevator speech of what a clinical trial is?
Yeah, sure. So a clinical trial is a research project. So a clinical trial could involve a medicine that's not approved by the Food and Drug Administration for marketing by one of the companies who manufacture these things. It may be a drug in development, or they can be doing they also can be doing studies on FDA approved drugs to further our understanding, knowledge, or apply the drug for a different use than what it was approved for. So what a clinical trial is a patient would enroll in a program where a medicine might be given or would be given to treat a certain uncontrolled condition, such as lupus. And so the person usually, to get into the clinical trial, would need to have a certain level of disease activity that was that we can measure and is not controlled, and then not have other conditions that are defined by the study that would exclude them from being in the trial. So once the patient meets the entry criteria through the screening process, then they are assigned to a treatment. And most of the clinical trials involve different doses of the study medicine, and they may include a placebo. And a placebo means an ineffective treatment regimen. And because the goal of a study is to prove that the drug or treatment is effective. And in order to do that, you have to have a group of people who in the study who are randomly assigned to treatment that is not going to be effective, so that we can see if there's a difference between the active treatment versus the patients who are not getting active treatment, and that's called a placebo. So the trial would go on. Many of the trials go on for a few weeks. Some of them go on for months. Some of them go on for a period of years. Patients, you know, all these studies are very carefully monitored by, like, for example, by me, the investigator at my site. I make sure that the patients are safe and that the study protocol is being followed, where the patients are being evaluated in the proper way and treated in the proper way. Patients are always free to choose whether they want to go in a trial. There's an informed consent that's always important in a clinical trial to make sure that the person who's signing up knows exactly what they're getting into, what the risks are, what the alternatives are. And those are questions that if you're thinking of doing this, you should definitely be asking the investigator or the study coordinator where you're looking into going into a clinical trial. Then, and the other thing about the study is that you're always, as a subject, free to say, I'm done with this. I don't like it. I don't want to continue to do this. Nobody, once you sign your name to it, you have the right to withdraw from the study. Now, as an investigator, I want to try to encourage you to stay in if you can, but there are lots of reasons why people might not want to stay in. For example, they're having some sort of side effect from the treatment. And that does happen. So all of these things you are a free person in a trial, and all these things are carefully recorded as the information that's gathered during the study. So placebo treatments only last for a short period of time, for a few months at the most, and then at some point, most of the studies that I do, there's a placebo-controlled portion that lasts for a few months, and then the patients who are on the placebo would be switched over to active treatment only for after a few months, because it's really not ethical to continue to treat a patient with a placebo for uncontrolled active lupus, for example, for a very long period of time.
And I really appreciate that explanation, because when we talk to family caregivers anywhere at our conferences online, placebo is always a major concern. So I think this is going to be very helpful to them to understand the parameters of what happens when you're in a placebo part of a study group. So I appreciate that.
They are absolutely essential for the conduct of a study to prove that a product actually is effective, because if there are psychological factors that play into our response to an intervention. So it's sort of like the power of positive thinking. You're being treated as a subject with a drug. You're not sure what that drug is, whether it's the active treatment or placebo, but because you're getting something, you may have a response. And the key is that the active drug, the active treatment groups, need to perform better than the improvement that occurred just from psychological factors. And that's been shown over and over again in trials.
What role do you see we as family caregivers should play for people living with lupus? I mean, what's the best thing we can do?
Well, I think that the patients that I have with lupus need support. They need help from their family. They may, the caregivers need to understand that the person actually has a medical illness. A lot of the lupus patients I see, they're not deformed. They don't look sick necessarily, but they're complaining of fatigue, and they have real legitimate physical complaints and findings. And caregivers need to understand that you may not, as a lupus patient, you may not be able to do all of the things that you were able to do before you were afflicted by the disease. The fatigue is one of the things that comes to mind here. And lupus patients have to rest more than the average patient who doesn't have the condition and isn't in any other way ill. And so understanding of that and being able to help out and pick up some of the responsibilities that the lupus patient has. A lot of the patients I have with lupus are relatively young women in their 30s, let's say, and they've got kids and they've got responsibilities and they've got jobs and as family members, let's say they're holding on to their job, but they're really tired and they're having trouble with their home responsibilities. We need those other family members, those caregivers, to be able to understand and help out when it's necessary and be cognizant of what the disease is and what the symptoms are and try to help our patients out. That's really the main thing is understanding and being there and just being empathetic really.
It's love.
Rather than
it's
frustrated,
understanding.
That understanding and expressing that is really important.
And as much as anything else, understanding the various ways that this disease manifests itself. So that when you see this coming, you as a family caregiver, as a loved one, know what to do, as opposed to thinking that, it's something they're doing on their own without the disease manifestation.
Right. I think that's a great point. Caregivers, if you can do a little bit of reading about, what are the ways lupus manifests, and pitching in when you can to do some of the things that the person you're caring for is having trouble with or can't do. I think that's really that, and the compassion side really is the main areas. Really.
So let me flip this for a second and ask you, what the most important piece of advice that you'd like to share with people living with lupus?
So I'd like to say that you really need to, first of all, before the diagnosis is made, but if you have symptoms that are consistent with it, you really need to get to somebody who knows how to diagnose the condition, and that's primarily rheumatologists. Rheumatologists we're trained in this area and in this disease, and we're able to make the diagnosis where much more frequently and accurately than most of the other physician groups and specialists that are out there, including the primary care physicians. So getting to a rheumatologist who can make the diagnosis, and also getting to a rheumatologist to guide therapy, to make treatment decisions, because we're the ones who really understand what options are out there. I think that is really important. Second piece of advice is when listen to your body. If your body is if you're fatigued, make sure you get adequate rest. Don't feel like you're down on yourself because you're not able to push and get everything done. However, effective treatment should improve that, and so being open and in your dialogue with your physician is really important, so that we can tailor therapy and make sure that it's the right stuff to control the disease, and so that the manifestations of the disease are controlled. I think that's really the key. If we can get it under control, that's the main thing that will help our patients get the best outcomes.
Well, this is why I'm really excited that there's a clinical trial out there now for people living with lupus, because, you know, the great things could come of it.
Absolutely. Like I said, we have so many opportunities with new products that are in development. One thing about drug development is it's really hard to get a drug through the FDA. There's been only one new lupus drug that's been approved in the past 50 years. It's really important that we get something new.